One of the more peculiar features of the past, one of its quirks, was that it was a much harsher, much more difficult environment to exist in. Take basically any point in the timeline previous to this one, even 30 years ago, although arguably that's a little bit iffy. Still, going back a little bit further, say 100 years ago, that's an easy argument to make. And then you go back 1,000 years ago, and then 10,000, and then 20,000, and so on and so forth. And so when you look at the past, most of the time, we're spending a lot of our lives in an acutely dangerous environment, a very difficult environment. And as a consequence, there were a lot of constraints and constrictions on what you could do and couldn't do. And by that, I mean literally in the sense that there were limitations that didn't exist due to technology. But more importantly, there were some very prominent and notable social and cultural constraints that, frankly speaking, we don't have anymore, or to the extent that it still exists, these constraints are limited to very specific cultures, very specific parts of the world, and so on and so forth. And a lot of people have a lot of different takes on the past. From the political perspective, people on the left typically view the past as a bad thing. And we're going to dig down on that in a little bit, in the sense that the past had these constraints, they were unjust, all these things that people on the left typically lament as bad. Well, one of the things the left is missing in this case is the reason why those constrictions and constraints were there in the first place. This is something that they always miss. Now, this is a sort of Chesterton's fence argument, or not entirely. But when you look at a lot of the criticism on the part of the left, and specifically what they focus on, above all, say, in gender relations, or the plight of women and their situation in the past, so often, I can't emphasize this enough, they do not take into account the environment that gave birth to the constraints that they are so inclined to lament in the first place. And so you end up in this wonky situation where things are rightly or wrongly criticized without any context. And this has been a flaw of left-wing thinking regarding many different issues, specifically here gender issues, for, well, forever, since they got off the ground, basically. And we've talked about this extensively, but you cannot talk about really anything in the past without the context of the past and why things were a certain way. I've talked about this extensively as well. The whole concept of patriarchy, in as much as it actually existed as the sort of mythical beast that is largely detached from biology and sort of is this social construct that men have created to simply wield power and abuse women and the rest of the world as well as other men. In as much as that's a real thing, or being charitable here, idea of a patriarchal structure of a society or a culture, part of that, unfortunately or fortunately, however you view it, is down to the environment that it evolved in. And this is a continuous issue of the left when it comes to human behavior, when it comes to basically everything, right? Everything is seen in a vacuum for the most part. Biology is unimportant. To the extent that it is important, you often hear, well, that may be the case, but that shouldn't influence our strivings and our ideals and where we're looking to change. The problem here is biology is a mighty powerful thing, and, well, it will influence the things that you are trying to change in your life. It will influence the movements that you are propagating. It's going to have an effect. You cannot ignore it and sweep it by the wayside. And this is an issue that, again, the left always gets wrong. And so to the left, the past is just fundamentally a bad thing. Regardless of how you look at it, regardless of how you slice it, there's nothing good about it. And it's led to the horrible, deplorable state that we find ourselves in currently. So that's sort of the left-wing perspective, very broadly speaking, of the past, how it relates to the present, the deplorable state of the present. There wasn't anything good about the past, and the present's a little bit better, but only because people have actively worked to change it. And they typically set aside, as I said, the environment, as well as technological innovations and changes that have had a profound effect on us socially, biologically, and culturally. But the converse of that is a more traditionalist right-wing perspective where the past was just a better place to be in general. And it's really interesting how both sides always kind of miss the forest for the trees in their own respective ways. But yeah, it's not an exaggeration to say that many right-wing people, specifically of a traditional bent, look at the past with rose-tinted glasses. And they see the behaviors in particular of people and the constraints as fundamentally a good thing. And let's be fair, in many cases, these constraints and constrictions were a good thing. They helped ameliorate the potential damage that could emerge from a harsher, more difficult environment that was very difficult to traverse in a physical sense, obviously, but also socially, culturally. In many ways, these constraints were just necessary. And in this sense, I think traditional people on the right are partly correct. Partly. They understand the inherent value of constraints in a way that the left does not, because the left thinks that constraints are just unnecessary and they don't understand their context or the reasons for those constraints even being there in the first place, as those reasons are almost always fatuous in the eyes of the left. But the right doesn't get everything right about the past or its interpretation. A lot of things, admittedly, but not everything. And specifically, in the context of comparing the past with the current moment in time, I think they're sometimes a bit off. So, fundamentally, when we look at the modern state of affairs, 2025, where we are right now, at this current moment in time, it's a time of very few constraints. It's a time, some might argue, of unparalleled freedom. There isn't much you're not allowed to do, say for breaking the law in very explicit ways. And in theory, everyone is free to be you and me. And in the eyes of many, and I think it's partly correct, this has led to a great deal of chaos. Now, people on the left, depending on their specific position, think this is a good thing because of things like self-expression or groups that they view as having been oppressed from their perspective. Well, yeah, it seems like paradise on earth. Now, I think neither of these analyses is actually true. I'll tell you what my perspective is, what I think modernity is and what it's done. When you look at the past, what you see is a lot of conformity at the end of the day, broadly speaking, because for better or worse, nonconformity was seen as dangerous, and in some cases it was dangerous, and therefore there was a hefty price to pay when you engage in nonconformist behavior. If you didn't conform to group expectations, broader social or cultural expectations, religious expectations, this was seen as dangerous. Sometimes this nonconformity might have been perfectly harmless, but in other instances, it could have been quite dangerous. And if you go far enough back to the time of our ancestors, when we're just hunter-gatherers trying to survive in an extremely, incredibly brutal environment, an environment none of us know today, then nonconformity can get not just you killed, but your family, your friends, your tribe. There's a huge risk there. So if you go far enough back, you can understand the roots of why people are worried about not conforming to behavioral norms. Now again, it's a mixed bag. Sometimes not conforming to behavioral norms was perfectly harmless, and sometimes it was potentially harmful. And obviously people in the past had a lot of really wonky views on things like witches controlling the weather and this sort of thing. That's just not true, obviously. But when everyone is dancing to one tune, when everyone is essentially forced to dance to this one tune, you're not really getting a bird's eye view of how people behave or how they actually are. If something like 80 to 90% of the people are all following the same line of logic or the same social dictum, well, in that instance, what type of information are you getting about those people's individuals? And more importantly, were all those individuals content with that state of affairs? You see, the modern environment, the current environment, as chaotic, as destructive as it is, shows us how most human beings, as individuals, and to a certain extent as groups, behave when you remove certain constraints and restrictions that were really heavy-handed in the past, understandably for reasons that I've mentioned just prior. And it shows you, under a microscope, how these individuals will behave when you take away all that stuff. It basically shows you how human beings actually are, as opposed to how they ought to be in the eyes of whatever expectation is placed upon them. So, you look at various sort of sociobiological phenomena like teen pregnancy or single motherhood, and frankly speaking, it's very likely that that phenomenon that we can observe, phenomenon of single motherhood, teen pregnancy, basically very youthful encounters with the carnal, very youthful reproduction out of wedlock in specific, these are things that are probably attributable to genes, ultimately. These are things that are probably attributable to basic biology interacting with psychology and a lack of constraints. Because again, if you go far enough back, none of that was permissible. And so people would sedulously and strenuously attempt to avoid these outcomes because the penalty for them, say having children out of wedlock, having children at extremely young age, being unmarried, and just engaging in this type of rampant carnal behavior with no restraints, it was frowned upon, to put it mildly, and in many respects, punished. Remove those constraints and you see how certain individuals will act. The same is true of everything else. This doesn't just apply to the carnal or the reproductive. If you look at people's alcohol or drug habits, this too applies. Because again, these days we have a relatively lackadaisical, relatively free-to-be-you-and-me attitude when it comes to all kinds of narcotics, alcohol being a complex one, but things like marijuana, things like various other drugs. And you can evince from this who is more susceptible to, say, drug addiction, who's more likely to consume. Classic example, right? Look at the obesity epidemic. I know we've talked about this a lot. It's an important issue. We're talking about tens, if not hundreds of millions of people, potentially. In any event, we see, in a modern obesogenic environment, who is most likely to overconsume food, who is most likely to not move sufficiently. So, essentially, what modernity does, for better or worse, because everything is a double-edged sword, everything that exists is a double-edged sword. There are only trade-offs. There are no solutions. What modernity does, it shows us who we really are, without all the constraints. When the demands of conformity cease to the degree they have now, you see all kinds of wackiness and wonkiness. It's true. Some really, really nutty stuff. But you also see what human beings actually are and how they actually behave. And you see all the variation in our behavior. Because if you go far enough back, take someone like me or Petey the Punani Slayer. Now, I always have to struggle to keep my weight down, just as an example. Always have, always will, until I drop dead. Here's the thing. Back in the day, that wouldn't be much of an issue because food just was not readily available the way it is now. Whereas Petey the Punani Slayer, on the other hand, just isn't interested in food, period. So he would have been fine either way. The point I'm trying to drive home here is rather obvious. The modern world is a mirror and shows us our behavior, shows us who we actually are at the level of individuals. And to ignore the biological reality that underpins both the past and the present, well, we do that at our own peril, because that is what leads to really kooky and strange ideas that are so alien to reality itself and contribute to the problems of the post-modern world. as I sometimes like to call it, that we really, really need a different approach to understanding things. Yes, the modern world has lots of problems. I'm sympathetic to varying degrees to people on the right. But despite all of that, on the other hand, living in the past, setting aside the harshness of the environment, the difficulty, where very few, if any, people could express themselves in the way they wanted to or were naturally inclined. And yes, some of those natural inclinations were obviously destructive and pernicious. Still, there were some natural inclinations that were not. Having only constraints does not make for a happy camper. And so, we might be in an extreme phase of history right now, but as human beings, we seem to just suck at finding the golden mean, that nice middle point where we can say, yes, you have some constraints, but yes, you also have freedom. Some people argue it was the 90s, although you could easily argue against that. Point being made here is quite simple. We will probably never find that middle ground where we can say, yeah, constraints are good, but we also have enough freedom. And it just seems to be the case that almost inevitably, in all likelihood, after this era, this epoch of great excess and excessive freedom, where the reality of individual human behavior comes to the fore, where the reality of how we actually are, we can observe it. This is how we are as human apes when all the restrictions are lifted. Well, eventually the pendulum will probably swing back, but it will only swing back provided the environment allows for it. If we continue to persist and exist in a cushy, comfortable environment, then that's probably not going to happen. But in any event, as always, thank you for tuning in. Many special thanks to my very generous patrons on Patreon, my generous donors on PayPal. Without you, this channel simply could not exist. Thank you so much, as always. And if you can engage in the usual YouTube jazz of liking the video, sharing the video, leaving a comment, subbing. Hey, if you're not yet a sub, you'd much appreciate it. If I'm still alive, I'll check you out next time. Until then, may the gods truly watch over you. Bye-bye for now. If you liked this video, please like, share, and subscribe. And if you enjoy my content, please consider making a donation or becoming a patron. Thanks for watching.